This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And making his way to the ring, weighing in at 260 pounds, Christopher Nowinski.
Chris Nowinski's professional wrestling nickname was Chris Harvard, a reference to his days at that Cambridge Ivy. He was the youngest hardcore champion in World Wrestling Entertainment history, and he was named Newcomer of the Year by Raw Magazine in 2002. But after Nowinski suffered a concussion in the ring in 2003, he started experiencing symptoms of a brain injury that eventually ended his professional wrestling career. He's now made it his life's work to raise awareness about sports-related brain injuries, and he was an important backer of a new law aimed at reducing head trauma among kids who play sports in Massachusetts schools. Chris Nowinski is also president of the Sports Legacy Institute and author of Head Games, Football's Concussion Crisis. Chris, welcome to Radio Boston.
Great to be here, Sasha.
Chris, I want to hear about your own experience with brain injury, but first let's talk about this new law here in Massachusetts passed just this summer. How would it try to reduce head trauma among student athletes?
Well, there's three key principles to this bill that was sponsored by Senator Badur and helped by Representative Kujawski, and actually was pushed through so quickly and easily because of the support of Quinnen Morris, Mike Morris, and Jim Morris, our lobbyists, worked pro bono on it. But there are three core principles. One, mandatory education for every parent, coach, and child in high school on concussions. The idea being that when I was an athlete, and we're all athletes, we don't know what a concussion is. So when we get hit in the head and we feel dizzy or dazed, we never told anybody. And it goes on today.
Never told anyone because you're afraid they'd take you out of the game and you really wanted to play?
No, mostly because dizziness or a headache is meaningless in the context of injuries in sports.
It comes with the territory.
Right. You sprain an ankle, that's a problem because you can't run fast. But if you get a headache, you can still keep playing. And so you never think to tell anybody. And then the other two principles are no more return to play the same day when you are suspected of having a concussion. There was a time as recently as last year when you would think it was safe to return a kid to play even when they were knocked unconscious, and that we now know that that's very bad for their brain, short-term and the long-term. And finally, no return to play until you're cleared by a medical professional. We've had coaches making decisions on when kids should return to play or kids themselves, and that's wrong. The brain is the most important organ in the body. You need a doctor to tell you when to go back.
Listeners, we're talking about a new Massachusetts law that's aimed at tightening safety measures for student athletes who may have experienced head trauma. We want to know if your son or daughter plays sports, and if they do, if you worry about head injuries, whether it's football or soccer or hockey. We also want to know if you think coaches and trainers do enough to protect kids from head injuries. And we want to know if you've decided it's just not worth the risk to let your kids play school sports. Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We'll be joined shortly by a BU professor of neuroscience who's one of the country's top sports injury specialists in just a few minutes. But first, Chris Nowinski, tell us a bit more about how you came to be so interested in head injuries in the first place, because it was really firsthand experience that made you interested.
It was. I was wrestling in June of 2003 against the Dudley Boys in the Hartford Civic Center, and Bubba Ray kicked me in the chin. And when I hit the ground, my head was throbbing, and for the first time in my life, I actually forgot where I was and what I was doing, and most importantly, who was supposed to win the match. And my memory came back over a few minutes, and my head kept hurting. And unfortunately, I wasn't aware that returning to play while you still have symptoms from concussion is very bad for you. So for 5 weeks, every day, I either wrestled or worked out. And I basically took a regular injury and turned it into something that stayed with me for years. After 5 weeks, I had to stop, and I didn't get better for 5 years. I had headaches for 5 years. I developed sleepwalking that hit me for 3.5 years, where I'd get out of bed an hour into sleeping every night, running around the apartment thinking I'm chasing my dreams.
And how old were you at the time?
I was 24 when I got the last concussion.
And you're how old now?
I'll be 32 on Friday.
32 on Friday. Do you still have some of these symptoms?
Luckily, most of the post-concussion symptoms are gone. So after that, the headache was the last thing. And so now my biggest concern is the research that we're doing at Boston University School of Medicine on chronic traumatic encephalopathy, the disease you can get from repetitive trauma to your brain, a degenerative brain disease that causes dementia.
This is an Alzheimer's-like disease that's been in the news a lot because it's been showing up in the brains of football players whose brains were autopsied after they died.
Right. We look at their brain after they pass away, and you can see an abnormal protein is killing brain cells. And just recently, a 21-year-old was discovered, the former captain of the Penn football team who committed suicide.
And in fact, what I'm hoping we can talk a lot about today is while the issue of brain injuries in the NFL among professional athletes has gotten a lot of press, it's going more and more that people are looking at student athletes, high school players, college players, because I believe there's at least one student athlete who was found to have had CTE. There was the UPenn student you just referenced,
yep,
who after he killed himself, his brain was looked at. He was found to have this Alzheimer's-like illness, even though he hadn't been diagnosed with a concussion, I believe.
Correct.
So is part of what you're concerned about the issue of maybe you don't have to have a diagnosed concussion to want to be concerned about high school players who are getting hit repeatedly in a game?
You're absolutely right. Now that we're starting to think about brain trauma and look at it, we're realizing that the average college player is getting hit in the head 1,000 times a year. High school players, because they play both ways, some of them take 2,000 hits to the head per year.
High school players.
So you're talking about younger brains are developing and more vulnerable to trauma. They're getting hit in the head 1,000 times a year, and they're in situations where we don't have medical staff. Junior high, Pop Warner, you don't have an athletic trainer, you don't have a doctor. So we really should forget. The NFL guys are fine. They're over 18. They can take on the risks themselves. But we really need to worry about kids who can't take on, they're not old enough to accept that risk. And we're exposing them to very dangerous situations when we're not telling them, hey, when your head hurts, tell somebody. The fact that we haven't been educating kids is crazy.
I want to bring in that other voice I referenced earlier. This is Dr. Robert Cantu. He's a sports injury expert, and he's co-director of the Center for the Study of Traumatic Encephalopathy at Boston University Medical Center. Welcome to Radio Boston, Dr. Cantu.
Hi there.
So we've just heard from Chris Nowinski about some of the symptoms he experienced after suffering a sports-related head injury. Are there any other symptoms that you think parents and coaches should be on the lookout for in their student athletes?
Well, there are a number of symptoms, and there's a checklist that lists the 25 of them, but certainly the ones that parents can sense the most easily, I think, would be whether their children's personality has changed, whether the individual's gone from that sparkle in their eye to the effervescent personality they may have to being very subdued, very lethargic, very slowed down, kind of like in a fog. Those are some post-concussion symptoms, and parents can really sense that because they spend, hopefully, a fair amount of time with their kids. But also, if their kids are showing any difficulties with concentration, difficulties with memory, difficulties with balance, coordination, change in appetite, mostly toward the side of not eating the way they would normally eat, or difficulties with sleep, both extremes, either sleeping much more than normal, or especially trouble falling asleep when they didn't normally have trouble falling asleep. So there are a number of things that the parents can pick up on.
This new Massachusetts law that Chris Nowinski just outlined for us, one of the things it does is forbid kids who are suspected of suffering a concussion from playing again until they're cleared by a doctor. But every doctor's judgment might be different. So, Dr. Cantu, do you have a sense of how long you think kids should stay out of competition after suffering a head injury?
Well, I think there's unanimous agreement amongst all of us that have been studying this for many years that no athlete, no youngster, while still symptomatic from a concussion, at rest first and then with progressive up to maximal exertion, should ever go back if either the exertion reproduces symptoms or if the symptoms haven't totally cleared. Where it's not perfectly clear is how long you hold somebody out once they're asymptomatic at both rest and exertion. I think most of us feel it's a minimum of a week, and some people, I think, would even be more conservative than that.
Dr. Cantu and Chris Nowinski, we have a caller who raises the issue of protective equipment, which I think is an important issue to raise here, and this is Aaron from Hudson. Hi, Aaron. I understand you have kids who play football.
I do. I actually have six boys, and my oldest boy is 14. He plays football. He's a very passionate, hard-hitting football player, and he has had concussions. One, he had his most serious concussion really was not from football, and I've sort of come to the conclusion that I don't want to pull him out of something he loves when he can get a concussion, you know, when he's not in football. But I'm really considering buying him a very expensive helmet, and I'd like to see what the opinion is of whether that's something that can protect him.
Chris Nowinski, how about you first? I mean, you've certainly been helmeted and padded. Is it just a matter of better padding and better helmeting?
That's one aspect of the ways we can make the game safer. Actually, Dr. Cantu and I testified in front of Congress last October. We issued a 10-point plan to the Sports Legacy Institute on 10 ways we need to attack simultaneously to make the game safer. I think Dr. Cantu is a great expert on the actual helmet differences, so he'd be better to answer that question. But helmets are a piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, I think Chris is absolutely right, and they're probably never going to be the major piece of the puzzle. Helmets can get better, but right now helmets are not made to a standard to protect against concussion. They're made to a standard to protect against skull fracture and most subdural hematomas. And if they were going to get that much better, they'd have to be four times better to prevent most concussions. So helmets are good. There's no question we need to wear them. But in terms of preventing concussion, we've got a long ways to go.
The other issue that Erin raised, that she doesn't want to pull her kid out of a sport that he really loves. And I wonder also, Chris, you maybe can answer this as well. If kids are getting hurt, they may not want to tell people they're getting hurt because they want to play. I mean, if you're a pro, you want to fulfill your contract, you want to make money. But if you're a high school player, maybe you are hoping to make it to pro, and being out a few games could jeopardize your chances. Do you worry, Chris, about kids not speaking up?
That will always happen. It's the same idea that you can educate everyone that smoking is bad for you, but still 20% of the population does it. There will always be kids who will refuse any education on this issue. But the fact of the matter is, the one study that actually asked kids why you're not reporting concussions, the number one and number three answers were they didn't think it was a serious injury, they didn't know they had a concussion. Only 40% actually were thinking about whether or not they should go back in the game. Regarding not pulling your child out, I mean, you know, we're not saying anyone should be running off the field of football right now. We are really pushing for serious reform of how we've been operating. But the reality is, you know, when you talk about your kid can get a concussion anywhere, that's true. But they're not going to take 1,000 hits to the head anywhere. And frankly, since I stopped, you know, wrestling, I've only been hit in the head, I think, four times in the last 7 years. It's really not a normal thing, I've started to realize. So a 14-year-old can't accept that risk. And so we really, what I want to make parents is greater advocates for better their coaches to be educated and for their coaches to be hitting their kids less.
Dr. Cantu, we have a question for you that was posted on our website by a listener named Paul. And this is what he wrote. He said, knowing what we know today about head trauma and brain injury, why are youth boxing programs still legal in this country?
Well, it's up to society to make the laws about what's legal and what isn't legal. The medical profession does not do that. They give testimony on behalf of legislators, but they don't make the laws. So if there is a point in time when society says that shouldn't be done, then it won't be done. Currently, there are a number of medical organizations, such as the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Academy of Neurology, which has gone on record as being against boxing in youth.
Listeners, we're talking about the brain injuries that can result from the repeated blows to the head that student athletes take playing school sports, and we're talking about a new Massachusetts law aimed at trying to prevent that. We want to hear from you, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jason from Cambridge is calling, and Jason, you've had a number of concussions, is that right?
Yes, I have. I've had 8 concussions, 3 of them bicycle-related. I worked as a physical therapist for 3 years as a head injury, at a head injury center, and did not believe that my injuries were all that significant because I hadn't been, like, hospitalized for a long period of time. Head injuries are known among many who have survived it as the silent epidemic, and I really, really hope that the interest in head injury among athletes will lead to a broader discussion of the prevalence of head injuries, especially in young adults, but their importance in industrial accidents, which I've had a couple, and throughout the population. Thank you.
Thank you. And Jason, you use the word silent epidemic, and I think silent there is the key word, because the idea of CTE, as Chris referenced, chronic encephalopathy, is that it can silently develop through unreported injuries. And as you said, thousands of injuries can happen to a team over the course of a season.
And I think it's also important that the majority of the most recent published cases with CTE have been athletes, and they've been high profile, and it's been in the press a lot. But the brain doesn't know what rattles it, whether it's an athletic hit or whether it's a bicycle accident or whatever. And CTE is reported in a number of individuals who were never on athletic fields.
And I think you're, I think it's your lab, Dr. Cantu, that's used a device that I think is called an accelerometer, in which you can put it in a helmet, and when a person has a crash, you can determine how fast that crash was. And some of these head injuries are equivalent to crashing a car into a concrete wall at 40 miles an hour. So these are massive hits sometimes.
They can be. The accelerometers are both those that are embedded in the helmets devised by the Simbex company, as well as accelerometers that you can be worn in an earpiece. And there's no question that high-intensity, high-G-force hits can occur. But the great majority of the 1,000-plus hits that Chris mentioned that occur during an average football season for a football player are low to moderate hits. The really high ones aren't that common in football. Ironically, in ice hockey, those high hits, though less frequent, are more common.
So even a sort of a multiple numbers of low hits can be as bad as just a few big hits.
Yes, that's certainly what the evidence seems to be, that it's total brain trauma, total cumulative trauma, not just at the concussive level.
We have another caller. This is Sheldon from Sharon. Hi, Sheldon.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
I'm calling with a question about soccer because of use of the head hitting the ball, and it's a regular occurrence and could be a shock.
Dr. Cantu, what about that? Is hitting the ball in soccer as dangerous as hitting someone with your helmet in football?
Well, I think the question is out on that one with regard to the amount of trauma that somebody might take over a pro career, like 10 years playing a pro, studying, I mean, hitting and heading for an hour a day for many, many, many days. There's no good study through collegiate soccer that would suggest that heading the ball leads to traumatic brain injury. There are incidental situations where you may have concussions from heading, especially when two heads collide, but not just from heading the ball normally.
We have another caller who, this is Lucinda from Acton. And Lucinda, your daughter actually plays soccer and had an injury.
Yes, she did. As an eighth grader, she was hit accidentally by the ball and resulting in a concussion. And she was actually out of school for an entire year.
Not out of soccer, but out of school?
Well, she obviously no longer plays soccer, but she as a result of that injury, could not read. She couldn't do any of her math. She was a very high-achieving student and could not function in school at all, and was out of school for a whole year.
Chris Nowinski, do you think when we hear stories like this, does it make you think we just need to rethink competitive sports in school entirely? Should the games be totally redesigned, or the practices totally redesigned?
Everything sport by sport. I do think we do need to redesign a lot of practices in terms of the risks that we expose kids to, and really the reward that comes out of them, what we're teaching them. But, you know, so team sports are I think a very important part to growing up. And so I don't think kids should pull out. But the issue is, you know, when the survey was done of Massachusetts athletes last year, they found that 20% suffered a concussion over the year. One out of five kids playing sports in high school in Massachusetts got a concussion in a single year. So there are very high numbers.
And Dr. Cantu, very briefly, do you have practice suggestions too, how we could change the game?
Well, most importantly, with regard to the kid who lost the whole year in school, I would want to know details around that concussion. I would not be surprised that this individual was playing with symptoms.
Mm.
But as Chris said, the major number one thing is take all the unnecessary head trauma out of all sports.
Chris Nowinski and Dr. Robert Cantu, thanks to both of you. Robert Cantu is a clinical professor of neurosurgery and co-director at the Center for the Study of Encephalopathy at Boston University School of Medicine. And Chris Nowinski is a former professional wrestler, president of the Sports Legacy Institute, and author of Head Games, Football's Concussion Crisis. Thank you to both of you for coming on.
Thank you.
Very welcome.
I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.